Welcome to OnSpec. This is your host, Fariba Nawa. We're interrupting our season zero to cover the coronavirus pandemic. Curfews, lockdowns, social distancing. Right now, around 3 billion people, half of the world's population, is at home. The coronavirus pandemic is spreading at exponential rates, and no country has the medical facilities to cope with the sick. OnSpec's mission was to bring you closer to the globe, a task that you might think is impossible right now. Forget about the people on the other side of the world. Most of us can't even visit our neighbors. You're worried about your health and the health of those you love at a time when you cannot even be with them. You're worried about your job, maybe even worried about where your next meal will come from. Guess what? You're not alone. Isolated from each other physically, humankind is grappling with the same problems, living through the same experiences. This week, we're going to start bringing you those shared experiences. We begin with the religious, those who turn to faith and collective prayer in times of hardship. But they're not supposed to gather anymore in mosques, churches, or synagogues. The entire concept of communal support in faith has been upended. Many groups are still resisting and continue to gather, but slowly, the choice is no longer available. It's your life or place of worship. Journalist Omar Farouk talks to three people in Spain, Kashmir, and the US, and how religious communities are finding ways to support each other without being together.
I'm in the historic heart of Istanbul, Turkey. As usual, five times a day, the call to prayer is recited here. But for the last 2 weeks, the crowds have not heeded it. Turkey, along with dozens of other Muslim-majority countries, has told worshippers to stay away, to avoid large crowds where the virus can spread. There's a new kind of ritual here now.
Öngörmüşçesine bir beyanda bulunmuştum. Koronavirüs tehlikesine karşı verdiğimiz mücadelede
every evening the Minister of Health appears on television to announce the latest numbers on the pandemic. Then the evening call to prayer is made. Then each mosque recites special prayers, asking for this crisis to pass quickly, for the protection of the healthcare workers trying to save lives. At 9 p.m., windows are opened and people clap from inside their homes. The sky is filled with the sound of applause as people cooped up in their homes show appreciation for those frontline workers in this new war. Like everyone else, my plans for travel and work have been put on hold by the pandemic. I consider myself a Muslim, and praying in the mosque gives me a sense of peace. It's exactly what I need at a time of uncertainty like this one. But I can't do that anymore. So I started to ask religious communities how they're dealing with this. 1,400 miles west of me, in Barcelona, Spain, Miriam Diaz has been indoors for weeks. Do you go to the balcony or anything? Like, you know, we see...
Yes, I do. And we walk to the balcony. When you called me at 8, we all have in the balcony every day. We applaud to the people who is working in the hospitals, and this is also a community moment. This is very good.
Diaz is a professor at Ramon Llull University in Barcelona and director of the Blanquerna Observatory on Media, Religion, and Culture. Spain is reeling from the virus. Nearly 6,000 people have died, and 72,000 are confirmed as having been infected. Three of the country's Catholic bishops have tested positive. Like so many other countries, The hope is to slow down the pandemic enough for hospitals to cope with the influx of patients. Easter is just 2 weeks away, and the week before it, called Semana Santa, is usually a time of gathering in the streets. Massive crowds walk through the city with elaborately made floats and effigies depicting scenes from the Bible and the lives of saints.
One of the big problems, it is not only that it is absolutely forbidden to meet with people and obviously to go to the church and to the temples and to whatever community gathering, but also the idea of Easter, and you know that in Spain, specifically in the south of Spain, in Andalusia, it is a very, very important tradition, the so-called Semana Santa. And that has been very tough for people because it's the first time that they are all cancelled, all these traditions, and all these traditions are in the streets. So this has been a very sad moment for cofreres and all the people involved on that. But they are very quickly adapting. And I think the important notion here is adaptation and flexibility. I think Catholic Church has adapted very rapidly also because of the example of the Holy See. You know that at the Vatican, they are also streaming, live streaming the Pope, and also the Pope has released some interesting measures also for confession, for all these kind of sacraments that really need the personal encounters. And also it is very important the youth and how young communities are, for instance, streaming masses, and you have every day you can attend mass wherever you go. For instance, I am in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. The other day I attended mass in Montserrat. This is our national shrine in Barcelona from the Benedictine community. And I attended that through the national Catalan TV. But the other day I attended mass in a small city near my city of birth, that is Girona. So you can choose. I mean, you can adapt yourself also to certain different communities. It is very strange because you are, for instance, through Instagram or Twitter, following a mass, and then people send hearts and emojis, and it is a very strange thing, but you feel a sense of community. I think it is more to be more centered into the word of God and not into the action.
What happens with like funerals, funeral rites and things like that now? How do people deal with that?
They are no funerals. I mean, if you happen to die, obviously they are taking care of you, but very, very quickly and with no rituals. I mean, it is forbidden. You are not entitled to say goodbye to your relatives. So it is a very hard moment in this. I think it is the worst part of this phase that we are passing through. And it is also very interesting how priests in this sense are trying to do their best. Some of them organize the masses on the balconies. They organize things very creatively in order to try to reach people. And I think we have discovered that it is true that in the Catholic tradition, the sacraments are very, very crucial and very important. But there are a lot of other ways of being with people that are very important.
Do you see more people being spiritual or joining, you know, these sort of virtual masses and that people that wouldn't necessarily be seen in church?
Yes, and I am seeing something interesting, that is people saying, I attended mass without being ashamed of that. Saying, for instance, on Twitter, professionals, liberal professionals, architects, doctors, journalists, saying, oh, I attended mass here or there. And in the normal world, I do not have this feeling. People live this more in a private manner. And I think now it is like a social need that is shared.
What do you tell people who say, like, I feel like I've lost control? Like, is this like a lesson that they should be learning from this spiritually, or?
Well, I think religious leaders take advantage of this moment to remember that we are very vulnerable, we are very fragile. We need to take also into account the claim of the earth and the nature. And this is something that perhaps with this savage capitalism we have forgotten. And this is a really a time for inner dialogue and to reconnect ourselves with ourselves. I mean, we are confined and we are remembering that all the things could stop. And this is not a show that must go on. That show perhaps have some fragilities, and we need to be very aware of that, and also our responsibility as human beings. And if you are a religious person, you need to remember that you are a creature, and that you cannot play with a creation without consequences.
Across the Atlantic in the United States, Jewish communities are also adapting by turning to technology.
Well, one of the synagogues has actually a Friday night pre-Shabbat, pre-Sabbath service that we all sort of participate in that way. And some people participate by phone, other people by a Skype-like mechanism. I think maybe it's called Zoom.
Yeah.
And there, a lot of this is very new to me, but so we do have that. Saturday there's nothing. I mean, Saturday basically there's an attempt made by some of us to do our individual prayers at our own houses at the same time as the community generally gathers for it. So almost in a psychic sense, it's like we're unifying with the community, even if not physically, but at least cognitively, emotionally, spiritually.
Larry Levy lives in Pikesville, Maryland, a suburb of Baltimore, home to one of the largest Orthodox Jewish communities in the U.S. The pandemic has drastically changed life for them, and no one knows how long they'll have to stay at home.
I think we'll probably be seeing more prayer services done communally online, utilizing different tools. It's going to be a challenge even in 2 weeks when it's the Jewish holiday Passover, mm-hmm. which is the essence of Passover is these long ritual-laden communal meals mm-hmm. at which we celebrate our shared historical experiences, Jews, and where we're at now. And it's also a time for families and friends to get together. That's not happening this year. I mean, we'll be having the meals, but likely it'll be four of us at our meal instead of the usual, you know, 30 that we have around the table. Mm. So it's going to be sort of an isolating time. But one that hopefully will make us, I'm hoping will make me, you know, sort of more introspective, more in touch with what's important in my life, more sensitive to people who are going through these difficulties and willing to reach out and go beyond myself.
Like people of other faiths, for Jews too, worship has changed, but now has a new sense of urgency.
Certain parts of the prayer, you know, there's a set liturgy, certain parts of it can't be done, but just by an individual at home. Like the reading of the Torah scrolls, that requires a communal setting for that. There have to be at least 10, in traditional terms, at least 10 adult males there to do it. In the absence of that, we don't do it. Other parts of the service are not done. Sermons is sort of a part of a communal experience, a communal activity, which we don't have. Other than that, I do pretty much the same prayers. I approach them somewhat differently. Mm-hmm. In some sense, sometimes I can actually, I'm finding, even on a daily basis, I can focus on them with greater intensity than really? Would otherwise be the case. Part of my own Jewish religious experience, including synagogue experience, is a social one. You know, I see friends I haven't seen, but you know, we touch base. Without that there, it sort of behooves me to focus on the meaning of the words, and particularly at a critical time like this, a crisis time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's direct intervention with God. God, please do something about this. God, please help this one mm-hmm. who has symptoms of the disease. Please help this one who's struggling financially. Please do what you can to remove the leaders, that the political leaders that seem to be not dealing with this very effectively. Hmm. You know, it becomes much, much more immediate, and the prayer becomes more focused mm-hmm. On what's going on right now, hmm. Which is no longer in any sense theoretical. It also creates, for me at least, theological questions.
Like what?
You know, what is this? What's behind it? Why is this happening now? What are we supposed to learn from this?
Have you found any answers?
Part of my own prayer journey is that I will find those answers, or that those answers will be made apparent to me. And to many other people. It might be just in terms of a course of events that we later on can see. I'm also hoping, well, I'm already seeing things positive coming out of it.
Really?
Whether that's the intent, whether there's some divine intent, and I found it in this, it may or may not be, but things like people really are caring for each other more, calling each other more, concerned about, you know, each other's well-being in a way that in our daily busy lives is not always the case. Hmm. There are far fewer distractions mm-hmm. now, and the relationships that we have and the things in our lives that we deem to be important can be at least more apparent now mm-hmm. without the, you know, all the other things that sort of get in the way, all the background noise that sometimes takes over.
Not everyone under lockdown now has the luxury of high-speed internet. In Srinagar, in Indian-administered Kashmir, curfews, lockdowns, and communications being cut are a natural part of life for millions of people. India has deployed tens of thousands of troops there to quell local aspirations for autonomy. Last August, India formally annexed the area and sparked an 8-month period of curfews. For months, locals were disconnected from the outside world. But now the coronavirus has found a way into Kashmir.
It really becomes difficult. We are not even able to sometimes open the Google page. Video chat is a very, very, very big thing. Sometimes we can do the audio call. Sometimes we also try to do a video call, but it's like a matter of chance. It's a luck. You can sometimes do it, cannot do it because 2G speed, and then that too is like reduced to nothing. So it's very, very, very difficult to even be connected.
Mirajuddin Bhatt is an Islamic studies researcher at the Islamic University of Science and Technology of Awantipura. He's been using Facebook to explain to Muslims how they should adapt and raising funds to buy medical equipment for doctors. This week, religious leaders in Kashmir finally agreed to close mosques.
Yeah, it was just recently, actually, we were trying to convince our religious authorities here that it is really very difficult if you continue to keep the mosques open, so there is high chance of getting infected. So we were trying to convince them. I also tried to do some videos, wrote an article which was carried by all the major newspapers in Kashmir. So we were trying to somehow convince them to somehow close the mosques for the larger benefit of the society.
So what is it like for people that they, I mean, people are sort of used to curfews and things like that. Are they taking it well, or how, like, how do you feel about not being able to go to the mosque now?
It's really I think hard for somebody who goes to mosques often and goes to mosques 5 times a day, and because there are a lot of activities people do in the mosque, and especially in this part of the world, in Asia, people often spend a lot of time in the mosques. Like, for example, they spend for an hour in the morning prayer in the mosques and in the evening. So this is quite a bit difficult, especially for people who are old, because old people in our community, they spend at least one hour in the mosque every prayer. So it becomes really difficult for them now not to go to the mosque, because we somehow managed to go to the mosque even in curfews. Even people have been beaten because of going to the mosques in curfew. But this is the first time, I think, as far as I know, I'm 31 years old, this is for the first time in Kashmir that people are not able to go to mosque even when they can go to mosque. So it's a very different, it's a very mixed feeling.
A major issue for Muslims now is how to bury the dead. Traditionally, the body is washed by members of the local community, then draped in a plain white cloth and buried without any coffin. That is now too risky.
And so what is different now about how the janazah is done? Do you know how the person was buried that recently passed away there?
Yeah. Actually, the medical authorities have told them that we will not be able to touch the body, and you also cannot able to touch the body. And there will be only 10 people who will be allowed to do the janazah prayers, and the body will be completely in the box, which again is a new thing for Kashmiris. You will not be, because we spend a lot of time at the place of burial. So it was totally skipped. Most of the things we normally do at the time of burial, all of them were skipped. And because we have right now in Kashmir 15 doctors who are under quarantine because they came in contact with the patients who tested positive. So they were taking a lot of precautions yesterday. So now things are really becoming difficult here in Kashmir because we have only 2G working. People are not open to information. People are not able to access what is happening or how world is reacting to this problem.
Are people asking questions about why this is happening? What is there a bigger meaning to all of this?
A lot of people have been writing on social media, and a lot of people are coming in different perspectives. We are on so many WhatsApp groups, so many Facebook groups, and a lot of people have been looking at this problem from different perspectives. Some are looking at it as God coming back and taking charge of the world. Some people are questioning the authority of science and scientism, the idea of science, that science has overtaken metaphysics and theology, now the failure of science. So a lot different kind of perspectives are coming forward. Some people are looking for example the last days of the world. So different perspectives are coming up. And people have got time to sit down, especially a place like Kashmir, where you don't have internet, you don't have a lot of facilities people have in the West. So it also has given us time to think about life, or maybe to rethink our priorities, or what we are doing, or where we are going. So it's a different feeling here in Kashmir.
Do you personally see any lessons from all of this, that you, lessons from this virus around the world and how it's sort of affecting people?
Yeah, I think the world that. Too much into our virtual lives, into our social lives, and building our own lives materially. We have been consumed so much into this material idea of life, of serving our body, that we have left no time for our soul. And I think this is the moment when you see homogeneity all across the world, and everybody sitting at the home. I'm also sitting at home for the past 1 week. So I think this has given me a chance to sit down and talk to myself and rethink my priorities and rethink that to what direction I am going to and whom I am serving and what should be my priorities. I think it is a moment to really talk to your soul, talk to your own self, that self which you have forgotten. I think since we are too much busy in the material world, into consumerism, materialism, I think this is really a moment to in a certain way, a chance to talk to your own self and inner self, which is something beyond body. So I think this is something really, I think something good out of it.
For me, it's comforting to learn that people across the world are having the same reaction to this pandemic as myself. It's a chance to refocus on what should be important, on your place in the world, and on your relationship to those around you, even if they seem further than ever before.
Thanks, Omar, for bringing us closer to religious communities from India to Spain to the U.S. And thank you, Oscar Durand, for producing this story. We've shifted gears here on Spec to turn our attention to COVID-19 coverage. Our stories may be shorter, but we're going to try to post weekly episodes. On Spec's goal with this podcast was to show how we're connected globally, and this pandemic is a daunting reminder. Perhaps hearing about your shared experiences will lift your spirits and help you cope wherever you are. Next week, our reporters will show how the pandemic is changing our social life. Tune in.